I have one of my favorite humans on today to tell you about an amazing product that we both love.
Why, thank you, honey. This is Milkman Mark Hyman here telling you about the Almond Cow, which I saw on those Instagram posts, and I thought, we've got to have one of these and see whether it is actually as good as it looks. And it is. It's actually even better because there are things that you can make out of it. Almond milk, oat milk,
cashew milk,
coconut milk, anything you want, you can make in this. And what's great is there are fewer preservatives, less sugar, and then what you get left over at the end is this pulp that you can make make cookies or muffins, so nothing goes to waste.
And it's there anytime. So if you run out of milk, you don't have to run to the store. It is so amazing. We love it, love it, love it. So if you want to get your own, check out the link and use code Laura for extra savings.
Approved by the Milkman.
Good movement, and welcome to Redefining Yoga, a lit yoga podcast, which is designed to investigate all aspects of the modern evolution of yoga from my background as a physical therapist and lover of movement. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter and safer movement patterns, so together we can be uplifted, benefiting all beings. Welcome to Wednesday Q&A, where you all ask the questions and we answer. I am joined, as always, by Kristen Williams, physical therapist, amazing friend, superstar extraordinaire.
I love it. Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you, everybody. Welcome to Q&A. We're going to go ahead and get this kicked off with an email that was sent to us from one of our fellow Lit Level 1 teachers, Lena. So Lena says, hi, Laura. Hi, Kristen. A friend of mine recently got diagnosed with slack wrist. And so slack stands for scaphoid lunate advanced collapse. She is devastated as the doctor basically told her there is no fix. Pain will get worse over time and she will need surgery at some point, which will severely limit the range of motion of her wrist. Is there anything from your experience that can help, or are prospects really that bleak with this diagnosis? Looking forward to hear your thoughts on this. Also want to take this opportunity to thank you for your wonderful podcast and Lit Daily. Oh, thank you, Lena.
Thank you.
So yeah, you know, this is something, I mean, wrist issues are tough, especially if for yogis, you know, because I mean, how much of our practice are we weight bearing through the wrist? And while I have never personally worked with someone with a slack wrist, I have had a lot of clients, a lot of patients who have had fractures in this area, falling on an outstretched hand, who have suffer from an advanced arthritic issue like this. And, you know, it sounds like she was just diagnosed, right, Laura? She said she just found out and the guy said there's no fix, it's just going to get worse, which yes, this is a progressive disease. So we know that to be true, but I really hate to have this gloom and doom feeling about it, because as with anything, any type of arthritic change can be slowed. I think it can be, the symptoms can be improved as well. You know, we really need to look into perhaps why, Lena, what your friend is doing that might be either, I don't want to say causing this, because I'm sure there's some genetic predisposition involved, but I would really love to look at her range of motion of her wrists. You know, look and see, what is she doing throughout her day? I feel like we talk about this a lot, but it really does apply to everybody. If she is a yogi, you know, what changes can we make to her practice to both decrease the strain through this joint and put it somewhere else? You know, is she weak more proximally? Does she have stuff going on in the neck that is, you know, affecting the strength? Because that is one of the symptoms of this, you know, a slack wrist. Eventually you're going to get weakness in the hand. Yes, you may need surgery. Yes, you will see progressive range of motion loss, but so much help can be had and done by really mobilizing those stiff areas and looking away from the wrist. You know, why is she developing this? Is it on one side versus the other? Is the other side really weak? Is she relying too much on that wrist? that's usually when someone comes to me with arthritis, yeah, I'll look at that area, but I really start to look everywhere else because I'm like, why is this part of the body taking the brunt? Because unless it's an autoimmune disease where there's really kind of no specific mechanical cause for it, with traditional arthritic degeneration, I think you can almost always draw back and find, look back and find a biomechanical strength deficient reason somewhere in the body for why her specifically that, you know, radiocarpal area, you know, so this, the scaphoid and the lunate are closer to the thumb side of the wrist. And so, you know, that is where she is breaking down, you know, so what, why, you know, and this is, it's tough because, you know, you, Lena, probably haven't asked her this, but I do know you're a Lit Level One practitioner and we teach these lovely people a lot about how to look at the body more, just more deeply, more broadly, more from a thought process of function and biomechanics, you know, best posture, optimal posture. You know, can you look at your friend and really help her figure out what she's doing throughout the day that might be bothering us? What can she do throughout the day to minimize pain? Does she need to be stretching? Does she need to be mobilizing? Does she need to be strengthening her scapula, her core? What is her head doing? You know, so there's, Laura, I'm going to pass it to you because I know you probably have so many great other things to say about what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, I echo everything. And I think the thing is, especially with a diet, like as we know, we totally support the medical model and the diagnosis can be extremely helpful. They can also be harmful. And so I would look at this as information gathering, and it isn't like a end, like this is your last, this is your last right, right? Like you, this is information that's that one, you know, you might, you've gotten. And you just have to think about, there's so many ingredients, and Kristen, you already named so many, but there's so many ingredients that go into creating an imbalance, a mechanical issue, a nervous system issue, et cetera, that leads to pain, inflammation, decreased function. It's not point, do this and this will happen. I think in addition to looking at everything you're doing, you have to look at like what are you eating? Is this a systemic kind of inflammation that is attacking or kind of focused on this one area? Is it a repetitive, like, is that your thumbitis side of scrolling? You know, all of it. You have to look at every habit, and that includes what you put in, what you bring into your life, what your stress is, every single thing. Because what we get is a glimpse into our ecosystem when we have pain in a specific area. And it might be that it is this, you know, degenerative bony thing, mechanical, but it might be that that is just the kind of what is the sounding board right now. So all the stuff you said biomechanically absolutely work proximally. I kept thinking of like, I feel like it was the dragon, How to Tame a Dragon. And I think the little guy, I forgot his name, but maybe his thumb was cut off or something. And he ends up getting this, I imagine like I've helped people with scaphoid issues and doing some kind of taping. I don't know if it was his thumb or something, but that came to mind. Just something that gives you more, this kind of harnesses a little bit of stability and comfort so that you can continue to do the things. Because, when you stop doing stuff, it can make things even worse, right? But you don't want to do things that are painful. So hopefully you're getting some taping, and Lena, maybe you can help her with finding some taping around the area of the radiocarpal, around the scaphoid, that can give it more of a sense of stability so there's not any kind of compressive or shearing elements. But I just would look at this as something like, okay, this is possibly the kind of diagnosis, and then there's some things I can do, but look at the other ingredients that could lead to this diagnosis that not everybody will look at because it does matter.
Yeah. I think it's so funny that you brought up the taping. Because literally on my time hop, just right before Christmas, I had a time hop's like this thing that sends you, you know, pictures from years ago. And my son, Ben, might've been freshman year basketball, was backpedaling and fell, and he broke his scaphoid. And we were just getting ready to leave. And luckily the doc got us right in, and he had a cast where he was casted on his thumb. And I was like, yes, because I thought for sure he would not be able to play Xbox.
He's going to go like, crazy. Right.
My thumb. Yeah. And yeah. So you see, there's a picture of him like this the one day, and I'm like, ha, 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 yay. And then the next day, we're at my parents, and you see him. He's like, figured out a way
to
play that Xbox. And I was like, good Lord, humans are adaptable. Let's put it that way. We will figure out a way to make it work.
And he's fine, right? Yeah. So
he's totally fine now. But
tape it up or whatever. But that kind of, because that can at least stabilize the more proximal part of it. And get back to us. But I think just dive deep in, and I can't emphasize enough how important it is to get different go to different people if possible. Don't be satisfied with just a diagnosis, unless it's from somebody you really trust and they really did a deep dive and they did all these different things, because it can really impact. It can impact people so much when they have a diagnosis and it's like, it's only going to get worse. You know, good luck with that. It's like,
and I hate that because it does.
I know. It's terrible.
And it really does. You said, it's just information. It's like, and it should be your wake up call. You're like, oh, yeah. Okay, what do I do? What changes can I make to really, you know, make a positive impact on my life?
Yeah, I had somebody who, just on that note, just as another example, I had someone who wrote me and said, you know, she was just grateful that I had encouraged movement in some plyo, that she had gone to a doctor, and because she had some osteopenia, the doctor said, you should never run, jump, squat with weights. Or I was like, what? I mean, you know, and she said, I didn't for like 4 years and I feel like it got worse. And, you know, it's just like it's like a balancing act. We have a very strong and resilient body, but we also have to move it with good, you know, mechanics to continue to have it be strong and resilient for many years. So anyway, onward to the next question.
Yeah, we actually got another one about the wrist. So we might as well piggyback. Also came in through our support@lityoga.com email from Ewelina Stolars. She says, I have a question for the Q&A in the podcast. I have a problem which started a year ago. For about 2 weeks, I had strong pain in the upper arm, could not elevate my hand fully because of the pain, and had pins and needles, slight numbness in the thumb and index finger. In the time, the pain almost disappeared, but took about about 6 to 8 months. But the feeling in the thumb and index is limited. I had an MRI, carpal tunnel syndrome was ruled out. I was told I have a bulging disc in the cervical spine, which pushes on the median nerve. I was sent to an osteopath, and after 5 sessions, no improvement. Out of desperation, I also had acupuncture sessions with no improvement. I was sent to physio, was told to strengthen the muscles around the scapula, working on it for a few months, and also now discovered LIT, but the numbness in the thumb and index finger remains. Any ideas what might help? Thank you for considering for the Q&A podcast. You want to start with that one?
Sure. Well, first of all, what I'll say is amazing that it's just kind of, you know, retracted back to just the thumb and the second finger. It's going to continue to, come back. It's like it's like a wave. It goes out and then it's going to pull back from there. So the first thing I want to say is, don't give up on anything after a certain number of times. I know you're giving us information. I so appreciate that. But like, When you have had something that has developed, it's developed over time. It's developed where that disc has protruded enough or pushed or bulged or whatever, or the structure of your cervical spine is such that some of the nerves are getting compressed on their way out. Who knows? But that has taken a bit to get there. And so it will take a bit to get back. And, you know, it's like a little unnerving, so to speak, to have that, but it's not terrible. Like, it's just something, just keep thinking, okay, this isn't the issue. I got to go up to the neck. Now, nerves, by the way, when they come out and then continue to go down, along that pathway, they're surrounded by connective tissue. And that connective tissue can also get kind of like saran wrapped around the nerve. So it might not even be up all the way in the cervical spine. It could be farther down. And that, so you have to look at the position of the skull, the mobility of the neck, and then also the chest wall. I would really like, you know, and that's the thing again, with anybody that's working with you, it's probably not going to happen in like three sessions. A lot of it is going to be on you to do this stuff like doorway stretch. You know, doorway stretch with a rotation of your spine or a lateral flexion. Just, you know, be a little bit, I don't want to say cautious, just but be very aware of your alignment. When you're moving your neck, keep the cervical spine really stacked in a neutral position. But I would start going into the chest for sure, because what I'm thinking is it still remains, and you've been doing lit and stuff, is that there's probably some kind of cohesiveness of the fascia on the nerve that is still making it like having some nervy things, but it's more nummy than pain. So that's good. So just doing some fascial openings there. You can use your own fingers. I do this all the time. Just come around here on the neck. Just real gentle. All you're trying to do is just kind of press on there so that it's not just welded to the nerves or to the connection of bone to bone or wherever that fascia might be. That would be my main thing. And like all the things we do, one shoulder at a time, like really mobilize the scapula, because the scapula is on the back, but on the undersurface connects to the front. So, you know, when we're moving that, we're also influencing the front, and we're influencing that nerve bundle, vascular bundle that comes out from the skull down this cervical spine and then out all that thoracic outlet and the brachial plexus area. That's what I would say, but keep, obviously, triple S, can't say that enough. Just know that. Make a marker today and then just be curious every day. But think, what am I doing to make it? Like, something can't be done to you, really. In other words, somebody, I could come and work with you, but it's what you're doing all the other time, the other rest of the time, that's going to really make a difference in the position of your skull, the mobility there, the fascial kind of malleability around the nerves.
Yeah, no, I love all that. And I would say, if you're listening and are curious, you know, go to our YouTube channel and kind of watch what Lara was doing with her hands. Cause you know, you are very demonstrative of kind of what you do. And if we're listening, we can't imagine that, but it will give very great, you know, great visual feedback. Cause I agree with you completely, Lara. You know, I talk about this a lot. I call them birds on a wire, you know, where our nerves are wires, and we know that you have a disc herniation. So that's one bird that's sitting on that wire. Apparently from your MRI, you don't have a bird sitting on the wire at the wrist. So there's no quote unquote, there's, you know, no carpal tunnel. So where might you be entrapped? Like you said, so work that soft tissue. You can try some nerve glides. I'm hopeful that your physio gave you some of the, you know, median nerve glides where you're just bending and straightening the elbow, you know, flexing and extending the wrist, you know, playing around with that. I love your posture. The opening of the chest is so important. You know, soft tissue work, you know, some body work to, you know, like you said, with yourself or someone else doing that, looking down around, you know, the elbow, you know, what are you doing throughout the day? Because it is good that she's not having pain anymore. You know, she only has that numbness and tingling or that weird sensation, which is maddening for sure, but that does show that it is that centralization is occurring. You know, your symptoms are decreasing, but you have this one little nagging thing. And that can take, just to give you perspective, you know, nerves take a long time to heal. So let's say what all you've been doing has taken the pressure off the nerve. Well, you know, now it may just need to heal. So you can facilitate that healing with all the things that Laura said. You know, if it's just getting the blood flowing to the nerve, gliding the nerve, sliding the nerve, looking at the mobility of your wrist and hand, you know, even though you don't have carpal tunnel, how is that mobility there? How is your, you know, your strength? You said that you were given some stuff to work on. Are you doing it? Because I'm going to be the first person to say, I am not a great patient. I'm only a patient when it hurts or when it bothers me. So I'm actually glad that your body is giving you some
communicating
feedback. That's going to remind you to do it. Otherwise, we all go back into our habits. It's when we have pain. It's when we have something that it's our body's way of going, hey, you, hey, help me out here. So I echo everything that you said there, Laura.
I just had a funny story that reminded me. I was like it was right after grad school, and I was going back to visit some friends from high school. And I'm just remembering because we were eating, and I went back to, because I have a really big laugh, and I threw my head back and opened my mouth as I was laughing, and my jaw, one side of it, there's a little disc there, it kind of popped and came back. But I remember I was like, oh, that was wild. Well, I overstretched the nerve, and that side of my mouth was numb. It was a small area. It was like I overstretched it, and then it just kind of wigged out on me. It was numb for like 6 months.
Wow.
Just to your point. Like
it takes a long time.
Like I had overstretched it, and then the jaw like kind of like, it was weird. It was just a combination of, so don't overextend your head and open your mouth really wide at the same time. It's a really nice way to kind of sublux your jaw.
This is like a public service announcement.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm really, because I do that a lot. I'm like, wait, don't overdo it. But it was but that's just to give you an idea. And I remember my dad said that. He goes, it can take like so long. So I was like, it was just numb. I was just sitting there going like that. It was funny. So yeah. All right. We got another question.
You want to go?
Is this the tailbone one?
Yeah.
Or yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You want me to read it?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
All right. She said, hi, Laura and KB. I have a question regarding my fractured tailbone recovery. And this is from
Chris Wong.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been talking with her.
So she says, I fell backwards when playing roller skating with my children yesterday. Oof. It was a big impact on my tailbone right away. It was awful. The next day I went for x-ray, and the x-ray showed the coccyx fracture, but not fully. According to the doctor, it will heal by itself in 6 weeks, and I will need to do another x-ray after 6 weeks. In the meantime, I am asked to sit on a round cushion and avoid putting impact on the tailbone. I'm a full-time yoga teacher. I can't stop teaching for that long. Any advice for me in terms of any movement to prevent further injury that might, that possibly the whole bone or possibly the whole bone tearing apart, or any movement which is good for recovery? I appreciate your advice and feedback. So first of all, for people who don't know, coccyx tailbone injuries are excruciating. For such a relatively small and useless-ish, we'll put it that way, just because it's not a true joint anymore. We don't use it like we maybe used to as a tail. It is very, very painful to fall on, certainly to fracture, even just to bruise. And so first of all, I will say, Chris, while your doctor is telling you it's going to take 6 weeks to heal, that doesn't mean the pain is going to be gone in 6 weeks, because I mean, I know even just from a bruised tailbone, it can take longer. So even though the joint, there's no real joint, no real, say we'll call it movement that's occurring down here that we would think of, you know, you're not going to cast it to minimize movement. There are several ligamentous attachments to the tailbone. And that would be, you know, so while they're telling you to sit on the donut, that's so you're not putting pressure through it. You are still going to feel this with certain expansive movements because of ligamentous attachments to the soft tissue attachments, you know, to this area. Fascial attachments. So as a yoga teacher, you will, it depends, this is, well, here's the thing, you know, are you teaching online where you are doing everything, or are you teaching in person where you can be more, I think, you can use better judgment for how much you're actually doing. You might have to really work on your verbal cueing because, you know, I think, are you going to tear the bone apart, quote unquote? Are you going to fracture it further? I highly doubt that. However, you might, if you go into a wide goddess squat, or heaven forbid, you know, malasana, where you're really getting a lot of pull on those soft tissues, it might give you a jolt of pain, which, you know, pain is just information, but it's also, you know, can, when we keep going into severe pain, we are limiting the healing process. So I would just make your movements a little bit smaller, but continue to move, knowing that you're not, provided you don't slip and fall on it again, it's very, very, very unlikely that you're going to injure it further. You might just, again, prolong some of the soft tissue, because even though you have a fracture, you also have a ton of soft tissue trauma from that fall, I'm sure. So you might put a little, if you keep pushing into deep lunges, which we don't do in lit, so it's not really as applicable in our practice, but in some of the more traditional yoga practices, you know, keeping things a bit more contained, I think you'll still be able to teach, you'll still be able to practice. You'll just, you know, luckily we don't do any of the seated forward fold things that would bother it, at least in our lit practice. So, I would just modify really to movement within a, want to say pain-free, because you're it's okay to have pain, but I talk about a stoplight, red light, yellow light, green light. You can move anywhere within the green and the yellow lights where it's not making you go, oh, you know, like see stars, that big intake of breath because it hurts so much. Because usually if that's the indication, if you get to that red light of pain, you're pushing into some of those tissues that are trying to heal, and you might be impeding that. So I like to kind of go right to that feather edge and then pull away. What else do you have to say about that, Laura? I know that you wrote her
pretty much what you pretty much nailed it. I mean, what's funny, again, another personal story. I was with my kids. We were with another family. We're having a great time. And I got T-boned, literally. That was the word. Like, I'm ice skating. And this kid comes and runs into me, but it kind of snaps my legs up. Like, you know, whatever. I don't blame him, except that I was. And when I landed, I was like, it was worse than labor. I mean, and I'm just on, because I landed right on my tailbone. So I did the same thing. I like hobbled off the ice rink, and P.S. I have not been ice skating since. It was traumatizing. and what I said is, I said, first of all, I know how painful it is. I'm really sorry. The second thing is, I didn't get an X-ray because I knew it didn't really matter. Like, I could tell, just I palpated myself. It was not displaced. It was just so painful and inflamed. So I also continued teaching, and I was fine. I just would explain to people I can't do some stuff. But I continued moving, and what I wrote her is exactly what you just said. I said, keep moving, because the bone is going to heal. Regardless, the good rule of thumb is avoid any movement that feels like sharp pain in the first few weeks. And so, yeah, it's a good thing to know, though, because it's kind of this, like, again, it's this vestigial leftover. We do have ligaments and fascial connections there, but we don't really know, unless somebody's got a really big tailbone, or like with birth, a lot of times the tailbone can get displaced or pulled on, or but it's really, it's important that it's not ignored, and that you get back to activity, because you're not going to damage anything more unless you go into this sharp pain stuff. And then, like you said, healing tissue. But yeah, if you have fall on it, it's horrible, but it's, you know, it's, you can't cast the tailbone, so keep moving. Anyway, I know, like, here, come here. I know. Oh my gosh. Can't even imagine. But great question. And Chris is feeling, she's feeling better. So anyway, as always, we love your questions. Write us about anything you're experiencing, anything maybe a family member or friend, anything at all. Personal questions, we're up for them. You can find us on Instagram. I'm Laura.Hyman and KBWilliams99 is where you can find Kristen. Or
you can write us email, which most of our questions came from, actually all three of them came today, support@lityoga.com. Those go to our help desk and get forwarded to us, and we just keep them there for you. And, you know, you can give us as much information. Again, the more information you give, a lot of times the better advice we can give, because it just gives us a little bit more of a backstory to go from. And then we will give you our opinions, our advice from years of practice, both as physical therapists and as yoga teachers, moms, females, just
women in the world. Yes, exactly. Lovers of life. But we love you guys. Thank you so much. As always, it would be awesome if you subscribe, rate, review, share with friends. We so appreciate your support. And we are always pulling for you.